send messages to Rome saying that Augustus is dead and that for the time being, at least, the command of the Roman Empire devolves upon me.
Tiberius, are you trying to deny me any part in the governing of this empire?
Yes, Mother.
Welcome back to The Life of Tiberius Caesar, episode number 2, Ray. How are you today, buddy? It's been a week since I've spoken to you. You good? Are you well? What's going on?
Strangely, I feel pretty similar to the way I did when we did episode number 1.
Oh, wow. I don't know why. So nothing much has changed week in your life. Hint, hint.
No. Nothing's changed. More rain in Central Virginia, so I'm still working on building the ark. I'll let you know how it goes.
You've upset the gods.
Yes, I have.
And your wife, I believe, because you told me last week you had to buy her a box of wine.
Yeah, I don't judge. It makes her happy and it keeps her quiet and she lies still. So, win-win. Win.
Oh, that's terrible.
How are you? How are you doing this week? As opposed to last week.
As opposed to last week when we recorded. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, good. Thanks, man. Anyway, let's get on with it. As you might recall, from our last series, in our last episode, Tiberius had a bunch of people killed or somebody had them killed. Aggie P,
yeah.
Julia the filthy whore, and her lover, Tiberius II.
Right.
But I want to talk this time a little bit about Tiberius. Who is this Tiberius? Now, those of you who listened to our last series, the Augusta series, will know a lot about him. But those of you who didn't yet, just a bit of spark notes,
Cliff notes
on Tiberius.
Yeah.
Cliff notes.
Yeah.
He came from several impressive bloodlines.
Mm-hmm.
The Claudii were, as we've said many times, one of the most prominent patrician families in Rome. The family traced its origin back to the very earliest days of the Roman Republic. They produced their first consul in 495 BCE.
Wow.
Think about it in terms of from Americans, the Bushes, the Kennedys, the Clintons, now the Trumps as your new royal family. Imagine if you had a family that had been producing consuls and dictators going back 500, 600 years.
Wow.
With the same name. And they've built buildings, they have their names on them, and roads and aqueducts and all these sorts of things with their names on them. So this was the Claudians in Rome. Suetonius writes, as time went on, it was honored with 28 consulships, 5 dictatorships, 7 censorships, 6 triumphs, and 2 ovations. And this is before Tiberius.
Oh, my God. And just to be clear, when you heard the word dictator, don't think in negative connotations. Normally, a dictator was chosen when there was a state of an emergency. They were given a limit time of to get things right. 6 months was normally the maximum. So it was actually considered an honor to be chosen as a dictator to right the ship of state or to defeat an enemy and then turn everything back over to the Senate. So again, even that is one of the many honors that this family has been allowed to numerously hold.
So he gets the Claudian bloodline from his father, Tiberius Claudius Nero. From his mother, he gets the Livii family. And Suetonius about the Livii writes, this family too, though of plebeian origin, was yet of great prominence and had been honored with 8 consulships, 2 censorships, and 3 triumphs, as well as with the offices of dictator and master of the horse. And, of course, he is the adopted son of Augustus, who himself was the adopted son of Julius Caesar. So he is also a Caesar. So he's a Caesar, a Claudian, and a Livii. And, of course, this is why the first half dozen or so dictator slash princeps slash emperors of Rome are known as the Julio-Claudians because right. they're part Julius Caesar and they're part Claudian because of Tiberius.
That's incredible. That's not even blue blood. That's like the elite of the elite, the 1% or the half of percent of Roman society. It doesn't get much more lofty than the Claudii.
Just imagine for Americans that you had somebody who was part Kennedy, part Bush, part Clinton, and part Trump. That's what you're looking at when you've right. got Tiberius.
Tons of money, tons of slaves.
Kennedy, Bush, Clinton, yeah. Trump.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, Tiberius was 56 years old when Augustus died. He'd been through a lot, as we talked about in the last series. At one point, he was in self-imposed exile for something like 10 years.
Right.
He just got up one day and said to Augustus, you know what, fuck it, I'm but done, I'm bored. I'm working too hard. My wife's a filthy whore.
I'm not dying early for you. Yeah,
my brother died. Everyone's died. I don't want to be the next one to die. By the way, you know, you're making Agrippa's kids your heirs.
Yeah.
So really, I'm just a caretaker president if something happens to you until they're of age. Fuck that shit. Why am I putting myself through all this? Fuck it, I'm out. And he went into exile in Rhodes for nigh on 10 years.
Yeah.
Before finally he came back when everyone else was actually dead, including Agrippa's children.
Yeah.
Except for Aggie P, who he then killed. But so it was a little bit of spit in the dummy. Since then, he's accomplished a lot.
Yeah.
Put down a number of rebellions that were happening in different parts of the empire. But anyway, and as we said in the last episode, before Augustus died, Tiberius had already been given equal power to Augustus. So
right.
he was the co-princeps, and when Augustus died, the Senate moved quickly to confirm Tiberius as the sole princeps.
And that's what's going to make this episode so ironic, because as far as everybody else is concerned, the moment that they hear Augustus is dead, yes, they're sad because he gave them, 50 years of peace and stability and riches or whatever the exact time was. Everybody else knows, the magistrates, the Senate, the people, they know what to expect. They know what's coming. They know Tiberius is the equal to Augustus as far as his powers. This should be a no-brainer. Everything's going to be fine, but the Senate still has to go through the motions, as we're going to see. There should be no hiccups whatsoever, but that's not how it plays out.
Well, the first thing I find interesting about this, Ray, is the Senate didn't take this as an opportunity to go, oh, thank God we got rid of Augustus. Now let's get back to the Republic.
Yeah, let's kill Tiberius and let's restore the Republic. But as I just said a second ago, 50 years these guys have been conditioned that one man has ruled, and his results were so amazing compared to what came before the civil wars and everything else. I don't think they could think or wanted to think of anything else. Now, if Augustus's 50 years or 60 years, whatever it was, reign was horrible and there was a lot of deaths and there was a lot of invasions, maybe they would rethink it. But because Augustus was so comparatively successful, I think they just want this train to keep on chugging down the tracks.
Yeah, like I think you're right. I think that's part of it. I think we also have to remember that over the last, say, 40 years, after the death mm-hmm. of Mark Antony in 30 and Augustus being the sole power
right.
left in Rome, for the next 40 whatever it was years, Augustus had sort of stacked the Senate with his own people.
Right.
There was a lot of nouveau riche senators. You had to have a certain amount of money to be a senator, and he kept moving that number around. But we know a lot of the people in the Senate were people that had become wealthy directly as a result of Augustus.
Mm-hmm.
So they like the status quo, the way things are. If things are working out well for you, why would you change it?
Right.
The people who remembered or longed for the old days when anyone, potentially a member of the aristocracy, could rise up, get a consulship, then do that for a year, and then go be a proconsul, a governor
make some money.
Of a province,
yeah.
rape and pillage the province, come back, Those people were probably gone, who remembered those days or longed for those days. As you say, Augustus was an old man. A lot of those families died off either during the Civil War with Julius Caesar and Pompey, or the civil wars that came afterwards between the second triumvirate, Octavian, Mark Antony, and Lepidus, and the tyrannicides, your Brutuses and your Cassiuses, or the civil war 10-odd years after that between Octavian and Mark Antony.
Yeah.
And there'd been a couple of minor conspiracies that had happened after that. Augustus had those people killed. So really, that doesn't see. There's no mention in the histories of the Senate going, oh, well, let's actually tabula rasa. Let's go back and figure out what do we want to do now. Finally, the king is dead. What are we going to get? Let's get back to the old thing. There wasn't even any discussion of this. Right. They just looked at each other and went, "Keep doing it. You happy with it? Yeah, I'm good. You good? Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, okay." It's like Ray and I when we go from Augustus to Tiberius. The season finishes, the series finishes. We just look at each other and we go, "What do you reckon? Keep going? Yeah, we'll keep going.
High five.
Right, yeah, we'll keep going. Let's go. You happy to keep going? Yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy. Yeah, all right, let's keep going."
And
that was basically it. That was the level of conversation they had.
Yeah, and just to prove that, I mean, you got the let's make this official. So even the consuls of that year, even though it doesn't mean what it used to mean 60 or 70 years ago, Sextus Pompeius and Sextus Apuleius are the first ones to take an oath of loyalty to Tiberius. And then you've got the Praetorian prefect Lucius Caius, I don't know how to say his name, Strabo, and the prefect of the corn supply, which I know doesn't sound sexy, but it is, Caius Tyrannius. So again, these are the most important guys, and they are, without even blinking or hesitating, taking an oath of loyalty to Tiberius, the lone princeps.
Now, this order of the swearing of loyalty oaths is actually really important.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go over that slowly. So the consuls are the first to take an oath of loyalty to him, which in and of itself is an astounding thing to happen.
Right.
The consuls.
They should be leading. Yeah.
Supposedly the most powerful guys in Rome, the first thing they do is swear an oath of loyalty to Tiberius, to a man. I mean, that's astounding. What has he done for them? Nothing. He's not Augustus, to whom they probably owed their appointments. But the first thing they do is swear an oath of loyalty to him. The second, the Praetorian prefect, Strabo. Now, again, for new listeners, Augustus had created this thing called the Praetorian Guard. It's kind of based on when you were a proconsul out in a province, governor of a province, you usually had a security force around you. You were a praetor. A senior political position with a fair amount of imperium out in the boonies. So you had a guard who would look after you, a special handful of soldiers whose job it was to basically be your bodyguard. Augustus said, "I like that idea. I'm going to have my own one of those, and it's going to be 9 legions of guys."
Larger.
Sorry, not 9 legions. Nine centuries of guys.
Right.
So, not quite a legion. So, 900 guys that would basically follow him around. This is the Praetorian Guard. Now, they were personally handpicked by Augustus.
Mm-hmm.
And the prefect, the leader, the commander of the Praetorian Guard, Strabo, worked for Augustus. He was Augustus's guy. He was his personal bodyguard.
Right.
The head of his personal bodyguard. He now says to Tiberius, "Well, what do you reckon? You happy? Keep going with this? I'll just be your bodyguard now." He goes, "Yeah, okay, yeah. You be my bodyguard
now. The check will keep coming? Okay, yeah, good, good, good."
So the other thing I wanted to say about this is Strabo has a son who around about this time is also made the co-praetorian prefect. And the name of that son is Ray
Patrick Stewart. No, that's his non-Roman name. I'm sorry.
The next generation?
I get that wrong. The next... something Sejanus.
Something Sejanus. Lucius.
Lucius.
Aelius. Aelius. Yeah, Sejanus.
Yeah,
the infamous Sejanus is the son of Strabo, the Praetorian prefect, and he becomes co-Praetorian prefect.
Damn.
Nothing like having your son go into the family business. I've always said that.
Right, very lucky.
Yeah, unless you're a podcaster, and then it's just lots more nothing to go around, yeah. And the prefect of the corn supply, Tyrannius. So, as you said, this was an important role as well. People may recall back in the Augustus series, they were having famine after famine because there was problems with the grain supply.
Mm-hmm.
And Augustus said, look, somebody needs to be full-time on this shit. We can't just have things going awry and then going, oh, shit, we don't have any food. Somebody needs to be in charge of the fucking food.
That makes sense.
So he said, oh, look, I'll hire a guy. I'll pay for him out of my own pocket just to make sure we don't run out of food. And that was Tyrannius. So it sort of shows you how important these guys were. So before even the Senate and the army swear their oaths of loyalty to Tiberius, the bodyguard and the corn supply guy, where's my corn guy? He said, Tari, the corn guy, get him in here.
I got the cornhole covered. I got the guards covered. I've got the two top politicians covered. Everything else has got to fall in place. It's got to. How would it not?
I am Cornholio. I am the great Cornholio.
Cornholio.
Covered.
And the bodyguard.
Right.
So it shows you how important these guys were. Then the Senate and the army and the people all swore oaths of loyalty to Tiberius.
Yeah.
Now, this is even before Tiberius has got back to Rome. He wrote to the Senate claiming the right to escort Augustus's body to Rome and summoning a meeting to be held when he got there to discuss the funeral and what they were going to do with Augustus's body. Now, we went through this in detail in the last series, so we don't have to go over it in detail here, but very high level. He gets back to Rome. They walk the body all the way back, city to city to city. All the elders of the cities come out, and they carry the coffin for a little bit. When he gets back, he holds this meeting of the Senate. Thibaut gets up, tries to give a speech, but he's too emotional, Ray.
Right.
Too emotional.
I can't.
So he hands over the bulk of his speech to his son, Drusus, to read. And I read out Cassius Dio's version of Tiberius's eulogy in the last episode of our Augustus series, so I don't have to repeat it here. Right. But it's worth remembering that when Augustus's last will was read out in the same meeting, he started with, since cruel fate has torn from me my sons Gaius and Lucius, let Tiberius Caesar be my heir.
Not exactly.
In other words,
Churchillian.
I really wish I had another option, but I don't. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
Thibaut is the new me. It sucks. I know. Trust me, I wish there was another way, but it's Thibaut.
For all you listeners out there, go back and play that line again. And if you turn your volume all the way up, you can hear Cam's eyes roll as he's reading it, because that's the way it had to be in the Senate. So again, not exactly a declaration of faith and excitement about this, but like you said in the last episode, Tiberius is all Augustus had left.
He's gonna have to do, said Augustus. Now, a weird incident that we didn't mention last time happened during this session.
Yeah.
A senator called Messalia Messalinus, or just Messy Messy to his friends.
M&M.
proposed, I like that better, proposed that the oath of loyalty to Tiberius should be renewed each year.
Now, this is important. This is a soft pitch. This is not a this is not that hard. You play the game of power, of not wanting power, of humility. This is not, should not have been a big deal, the way I read it.
Now, Eminem wasn't some fucking hobo off the street either. Right. He'd been consul in 4 BCE, then he'd been the governor in Illyricum. That's when they had the Great Illyrian Revolt, and he'd served with Tiberius to some distinction, apparently.
Yeah.
Anyway, on this occasion, he suggests they renew their oaths every year to Tiberius, and Thibaut, for some reason, got seriously pissed off. And he said, he turns to Eminem and says, "Are you suggesting that I need that, that I want that, or something? Yeah. That I'm that fucking insecure that I need you to swear oaths to me every year or something? Is that what you're trying to get at, Eminem?
Mate. Yeah. And I want you to fucking tell everybody right now that I did not put you up to this. This is bullshit. I had nothing to do with this." And everybody's probably looking around going, "What the fuck is he doing? Doesn't he know how to play the game?"
Eminem said, no, I just...
Back up, yo.
Thought of it myself. I just thought that would be a nice thing to do because, you know, you're new here and shit. And you know, we just thought, I was just trying to be nice.
Yeah.
Thibaut was all like, "Well, fucking don't go around suggesting that I'm that fucking needy, all right? I don't need you guys. My life was fine before this. I don't need you, so just fucking watch it before you make me look bad."
Right.
And Eminem was like, "Shit, dude. Like, who got up on the wrong side of the bed this morning? Yeah, the princeps.
Who
shut the fuck out, man.
Right. Who died? You or Augustus?" No, you can't. You can't say that in the Senate. It's too early. No,
died and made you princeps? Oh, Augustus did. No, that's right.
But Masala, and we've said this in past episodes. When people are giving speeches in the Senate, you start at the top and then you go down. So for Masala to be speaking this early on, this is a pretty big deal. Like you said, he is a man of clout, of experience, and he was, I think, ballsy enough to stand up to a degree to Tiberius and say, "Look, when it comes to affairs of the state, I'm going to say what I think is best, even if you get pissed off. That's my job as a senator, is to consent and advise. That's what I'm doing now. Calm the fuck down."
So that wasn't going so smoothly. And then the Senate met again on the 17th of September in order to consecrate Augustus as a god.
Right.
Now, I want to stop on this and talk about this a little bit because it's kind of important. And I talk about this quite a bit in my upcoming Christianity documentary.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking, it's 14 AD or CE here.
Right.
Jesus running around, he's got pimples. He's going through his emo phase, listening to a lot of The Cure, I think, at this stage, writing bad poetry, existential poetry. "Why am I here? What is this all about?
Where does the hair coming from?" Yeah, had
his first cigarette at this age, I think. Sneaking some booze out of his dad's liquor cabinet when they went away for the weekend. This is a long time before anyone's calling Jesus a god. They don't start saying Jesus was a god for another probably at least 15, if not 30, 40 years, based on the historical record that we've got. So, you know, for the vast majority of Roman history, up to this point, men didn't die and become gods.
Not your norm. Gotcha. Check.
No. This doesn't happen every day. Romulus, the perhaps mythical founder of Rome, died and was declared a god, according to Plutarch.
Right.
But that was it. It didn't happen. No one else in the Roman Empire or the Roman Republic died and became a god until Julius Caesar.
Right.
Died 44 BCE. Augustus, famously, or Octavian as he was then, saw a comet shooting through the sky after Julius Caesar died and said, "Oh, look, that's his soul rising up into heaven. He's become a god." Right. And they said, fucking, all right, whatever you say, boss. And they built a cult around Julius Caesar.
Right.
He was officially a god.
Yeah.
Temple priest,
the whole thing.
The whole fucking thing. Right. I mean, which may be hard for modern listeners to appreciate, but it's like Donald Trump dying and everyone declaring he was a god, building a whole temple, you know, priests.
I would become a priest.
Virgins.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
So that happened, and then Augustus died exactly 50 years later, and give or take like 1 to BC to 1, I never remember how to do the numbers, maybe it's 49 years later, you go from 1 BCE to 1 CE.
Yeah.
How does the maths work on that? I never work it out. But anyway.
It's magic.
Roughly 50 years later, let's say that. He dies, they declare him a god.
Wow.
So before Jesus,
yeah,
people start saying he was a god. There had, in the previous century, two other men had died and been declared gods.
Ah.
So Romulus happens, sure. Then nothing for 700 years. And then, all of a sudden, almost back to back, you have three men in the Roman Empire die and become and be declared gods after they die. Two are Romans and one's a Jew.
Wow. And don't get us wrong, in the time of the Roman Republic, there were a lot of Romans who did incredible things, great conquests, fighting off Hannibal, that kind of stuff. So there was a lot of people, if you were just going to base it off military deeds, there could have been a lot of Romans made gods. But you're absolutely right. It just wasn't done until the time of Caesar. And now I'm getting the sense that it wasn't really thought through it wasn't a big debate. This is going to happen. We're going to make this guy a god.
I just think it's interesting that it doesn't happen. Oh, yeah, it happens. Three times in a row. Boom, boom, right. Boom. Within like, depending on when you think they started calling Jesus a god, but the earliest evidence we have for it is Paul's letters sort of written in the 50s, but even he's not really calling Jesus a god. I mean, it's probably not until the Gospel according to John, probably written at the end of the first century, early second century, where he's suggesting Jesus was actually God. The early Gospels don't say that.
Right.
In fact, they say the opposite. in the Gospel according to Mark, Jesus actually says, "Why do you call me good? Only God is good."
No.
Huh. Which some people translate as a bit of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, hey, right. You think I'm good? God is good, therefore, hey, right. Hey,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You see what I'm getting at? Hey, hey, no, do I have to fucking spell it out? That's do I have right. to spell it out to you?
Nudge, nudge.
I don't take it as that way at all. I take it as, you know, he's going, no, I'm not good because I'm not God. Only God is good. I'm just a guy.
You take it at face value. Fits, right.
Which fits in with the rest of the Gospel according to Mark.
Gotcha.
Jesus doesn't claim to be God. I mean, that's why when he's, you know, in the Garden of Gethsemane before his arrest, he's begging God. He's saying, hey, don't make me do this. Yeah. I don't want to do it.
No.
I didn't sign up for this. What the fuck, dude? This wasn't in the contract.
Get me out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very clear in the Gospel according to Mark that Jesus doesn't think he's God. God is separate to him. But by the time you get to the fourth Gospel, he's like, no, fuck it, I'm God, people. Whoa, hey, give it up. Anyway, so I just think it's interesting that all of a sudden this is becoming a meme now. Oh, okay, so a guy can die and become a god. All right, okay. It wasn't original to Rome. We know that when Alexander died, they declared him a god.
Yeah.
And it had happened at different times in different parts of the world centuries before, but it was a pretty unusual thing to happen in Rome up until the Caesars.
Right. And Alexander had his temple, he had his priests, he had his followers, and now Julius Caesar does, and now I'm assuming everybody's about to sign up for the new, the latest, the greatest god, Augustus.
Yes. You know, he was very popular, and there was a whole cult built around Augustus. Great cult. And
everybody tells me. Yeah.
Everybody tells me it's a great cult. Yeah. Has all the best words in his cult. Now, after they declared Augustus a god, then the Senate brought up a motion. The consuls brought up a motion to determine Tiberius's position officially.
Makes sense. All right.
Now, sadly, the details of this meeting haven't come down to us, which is actually a tragedy. Yeah. Wouldn't you love to know what they actually talked about?
I wonder if it could also capture their enthusiasm. How many were faking it? How many thought, like Augustus said, like, you know, this is the best we got. Maybe the country's institutions will be strong enough to survive this really bad leader. Hey, wait a minute. Where have I heard that from?
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
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 Well, you would think that this would have come down to us. This is a big defining moment in the establishment of the empire. Surely guys like Tacitus and Suetonius had access to the documents, the histories of this. The fact that it doesn't exist, I find a little bit interesting.
Suspicious. Yeah.
Like maybe it was deliberately eradicated from Cassius Dio and Tacitus and Suetonius's accounts of this period. But anyway, it is what it is. We have to read between the lines, and I think we can assume a few things. One is that Tiberius already had imperium, including inside the city of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of Augustus's death, Tiberius held both proconsular imperium and tribunician power, power of a tribune, and the imperium of a proconsul. Proconsul is basically better than a consul because a consul's in Rome. Proconsul has areas outside of Rome. You know, he could go around anywhere and tell people what to do of Rome. But he must have also had it in the city, which would explain why the prefects swore him an oath of loyalty in the city.
Right, absolutely. And here's the other part of it. We were talking about the Praetorian Guard. Inside the Pomerium, the sacred ancient boundary of Rome, you couldn't have weapons, you couldn't have soldiers, you couldn't have swords. The only one who's allowed to do that at this point is the princeps, Tiberius. So his guards are there. They've got weapons. They're the only ones who are allowed to, and they're protecting this man. So not only does he have the imperium, not only does he have the tribunician power, he also has his auctoritas, his dignitas. And so, again, this should be a no big deal. We're going to go through these motions. We're going to officially give Tiberius a vehicle to house his powers, because all his powers were given to him as a man, as a person, not through an office. So they just got to go through this little bit of paperwork, dress it up, give it some pageantry, and everything's going to be fine. But for whatever reason, it is not going to go that smooth.
Well, as we've said, he already had all of these powers. Yeah. They weren't giving them to him.
Right,
they were just going, he's still got them, right? Yeah, he's still got them. Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean the powers, but just the understanding, just to formalize, okay, we are now acknowledging, not that we're giving you permission, but we are now acknowledging you as the lone princeps. This should have been a cakewalk for everybody.
Exactly. So there can't really be any doubt that during his principate, Tiberius had imperium that was valid inside the city of Rome, inside the Pomerium, as well as outside in the various provinces. And some of the reasons for that, apart from the fact that the Praetorians were swearing an oath of loyalty to him in the city, so he must have had the power to command, which is imperium.
Yeah.
Dio speaks of him administering justice in the forum, which he could only do if he had imperium inside the city. Tacitus and Dio also say that when he visited the praetor's courts, he took a seat to the side of the tribunal so as not to make the praetor vacate his official chair, which implies that Tiberius had the right to take the praetor's chair.
Right.
Therefore, he must have had imperium greater than a praetor inside of the city.
Yeah.
So there was no formal need for a consular motion to confer any powers on Tiberius. As I said, he already had them. He may, though, there is a theory that he may have laid down his powers when Augustus died, and the Senate confirmed them back on him.
Right.
But again, there's no record of what actually happened in this meeting, so we don't really know. But either way, he either laid them down and they said, no, that's good, we're happy, pick them back up, or they just said, you've still got it, it's all good.
Yeah.
Keep doing what you were doing.
High five. But here's the other part, and just to be clear, like you were saying earlier, Tiberius is the co-princeps. He has equal powers. Just because Augustus is dead, that in no way, shape, or form affects the powers that Tiberius has, which is exactly the whole point. A smooth transition of power from a younger man, from the older man to the younger man, so we can keep everything going exactly as is. There should be no feathers ruffled. Everything should be good. And that's the whole point.
But the problem isn't that Tiberius doesn't have any powers. He has powers.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a province
to
exercise those powers in.
Right.
Now, back in 13, when his imperium was made equal to that of Augustus, the provinces of the empire, you'll recall, were still divided between Augustus and the Senate. Basically, when Augustus was rejigging things at various times during his rule, He said, look, I don't want any power, quite honestly. I don't want it. I don't need it. I'm happy just to sit at home and watch TV, put my feet up, eat some popcorn, and deflower maidens. That's all I want to do. And they were like, oh, but Augustus, there's so many problems in some of the provinces, and who could deal with them except you? And he said, all right, listen, I'll take the hot spots.
Right.
You take the cool spots. Deal? And they went, fuck yeah, deal.
You.
So ever since then, Augustus had the power to govern the difficult provinces, and the Senate had the ones that had been bedded down. And the theory was that when Augustus bedded down the hotspots, he'd move them over to the Senate.
Right.
But for one reason or another, that had never really happened. So, but these provinces were granted to him as an individual. When he died, his authority over those provinces would cease to exist, and Tiberius can't automatically inherit those. So one of the things this consular motion needs to do is to decide which provinces Tiberius is going to be able to exercise his powers in.
And this is the other part. We said this several episodes back, that all of Augustus's provinces have troops on them. I think only one or two of the Senate's provinces had troops. So not only does Augustus have all this money, this wealth, this auctoritas, he's actually got all the troops that are loyal directly to him first before the Senate and people of Rome. So now that, and he was, like you said, he's handling the border areas, the hotspots. Now the Senate has to officially, through the Senate, give these provinces to Tiberius. He'll actually have something that he can do with his political powers. Again, this should not be a big deal, but it does have to be done officially, and it has to be done through the Senate.
And the reason why we're taking time to go through this is the big question, of course, in this period is, when does the Roman Empire start technically?
Right.
I mean, we know Augustus wasn't an emperor, didn't call himself an emperor, didn't call himself a king.
Right.
He was just the first among equals. He was a princeps, had a lot of power.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. If I change all their laws, and so you legally control the money, you legally have all the soldiers who are loyal to you, you legally can do whatever you want and pretty much have more power or say-so than anyone else, is it still a republic? Just because we've changed the laws and we made you all-powerful, the fact that you are the power, in fact, does it matter if we call you king or emperor? I mean,
but he didn't change the laws. I mean, they still had the Senate. They still had consuls. He still, you know, there were submissions to the Senate. The Senate was still determining what the laws were. He was just saying, I think, you should pass this law. And they go, oh, okay, all right.
Thank you, sir.
We'll take that under advisement, sir. and then they would pass it.
I see your point, but the transition from when, and I can't remember the exact year, I apologize, when they had their first big compromise or whatever the exact term is, from that to the moment that Augustus dies, when Augustus dies, up until that moment, near the end, they were going through the motions. They were faking it. Everybody's using the right words. Everybody's given the line, you know, but we all know who's in who has absolute power, and no one can tell him no. But I see,
like your wife in the bedroom. They were faking it, going through the motions.
I don't care. I'm okay with that. Yeah. How does she not care?
They didn't.
Anyway.
They didn't care either. They were like, you know, we just want to look important. We don't care if we actually have any power. As long as we look important, that's all that matters.
And there's no civil war. No one's dying. So that's certainly preferable to what happened under Caesar and when he and Pompey were going at it.
But here's the point with Tiberius. They said, we're going to give you all of Augustus's old provinces, Tibbo.
Right.
And he said, no. What? He said, I'm thinking not. And they said, you want more? And he goes, no, fuck no. No, I don't want any of it.
I was thinking splitsies. Splitsies, have you heard of that? That's a Roman term. There's so much shit.
Yeah.
Maximus. Yeah, Splitius Maximus. I'll take a little bit of what Augustus did, but I don't want all of it because that's just a shit ton of stuff. And that's just way too much. I've done my time. So if I could take a little less than what you're planning for me, that would really be good for me. I could sign off on that. Does the Senate believe him?
He says, look, guys, seriously, I don't like the pressure. I know I shouldn't admit that in my interview. It's like going to a job interview and they go, well, we're prepared to offer you the job. And you go, well.
Well, tell you what.
Actually, yeah. I don't know if you're watching. Are you watching the current season of Better Call Saul?
No, I'm still trying to catch up.
Well, it's not really a spoiler, but at one point, Jimmy can't practice law. He's been disbarred for like 12 months. So he's looking for a job and he goes to, he ends up at a photocopy dealership. And he just puts on this great job interview and they're like, oh, fuck, you're the great. He knows everything about photocopies because he used to work in the mailroom at Hamlin McGill. And he's like, he knows it all. And they're like, and he goes, I'm going to go out there and they go, you're fucking great. And they offer him the job. And he goes, seriously? That's it. You just offered me the job. You don't know anything about me. I could be a serial killer. I could be a rapist. I come in here. I just do a little dog and pony show and you offer me the job. Are you fucking serious? No background checks? What's wrong with you people?
Not exactly.
That's what Tibbo did.
Yeah.
They were like, here, we want you to have the job. He goes, I don't want it.
I mean, I want it, but I don't want all of it.
Do you know me at all? I'm the guy who went into self-imposed exile for 10 years. Because it was too hard. I didn't want the job. That wasn't even the top job. That was like the second. That was assistant to the regional manager job. I couldn't even do that.
I spent 10 years looking at my navel, and I was okay with that because you know what? You hardly ever die or get killed from that. And that's what I was looking for. So no, not exactly. I'm not exactly up for this. I appreciate it. And I'm flattered. Actually, I'm not. Fuck you. I don't want all this stuff. You guys are trying to kill me slowly.
And I'm 20 years older now. Like life is supposed to be getting better.
50 what? 54?
56.
56.
You're fucking and I'm rich.
Me. Yeah.
I'm rich.
I have two. I don't have a wife. Of the wealth of Augustus. Yeah.
Yeah. I can just cocaine I can do whatever hookers. I want, you know. Yeah, I've got a yacht. I'm going to sail around the Maldives. I've got Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal lined up. Bunch of blow.
I got one speed dial. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't need this shit. I'm getting too old for this shit. He said.
What about the state? Fuck the state.
I'm too old for this shit.
I'm too old for this. You go first. I'm really too old for this.
No, you go first. I'll cover you.
Boy, I'm getting too old for this shit.
Not like- I hate to say this. You're getting too old for this shit.
How many times did they use that line?
That's an actual recording of the Senate. But the Senate is made up of rich white men who are obsessed with obtaining power, they're not exactly believing Tiberius as he's, I don't know, if he's giving himself a hug or he's boohooing or whatever, but he is actually fighting back. And these men think that he's doing the old Augustus move where you go, no, I'm not worthy. No, I appreciate it. Okay, I'll do it. But the point is, he's doing it so badly, these guys don't believe him, but they're also getting frustrated with him at the same time.
I think part of what's going on here too is he's going, no, I don't want to do it. And they're like, well, we're not going to do it. Like, who do you think?
We haven't done it for 40 years. We don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes, but you're saying, but we just come in here and put the robe on and then just play cards all day. Like, we don't.
You
don't. Yeah. You expect us to do something? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Do you know us? We are useless.
Yes.
We are totally useless.
Rubber stamp. I got two words for you. Rubber stamp.
Yeah, rubber stamp. That's what you can't expect us to do. No. You have to do it. That comes with the name.
I'm rubber.
Caesar, you
stamp.
Have to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we replaced Barry and Stan. They left. We came up with rubber and stamp. That's who we are.
A legal firm. Yeah, rubber and stamp.
Tebow says, look, it's too much for any one man. The only one man that could do this was Augustus, and he was a god. I'm right. Not a god.
No.
I am the son of God.
Right.
And then Jesus went, I like the sound of that. I might use that. Do you mind if I... He was actually walking past the Senate at the time.
Yeah.
He heard Tiberius say, I'm the son of God. And Jesus went, do you mind if I... And Tiberius is like, no, take it. Dude. Yeah. You're a Jew. No other Roman can use that, but Jews, I don't care what the Jews do. He ended up caring what the Jews did, but that's another story.
And Tiberius starts rolling up his sleeve because he's getting serious now. He goes, look, I used to just do one or two things at a time for Augustus, and I could barely handle that. That was fucking stressful. That's why I quit in the first place. And now you want me to handle the whole ball of wax? Fuck me. No, fuck you.
Fuck you. I'm not Alexander the Great. I'm just Tebow. You know me, Tipster.
Tebow from... I'm your mate. Tebow. I'm your pal. Your pal.
Tebow from the block. Now, he said they should divide the job amongst a group of men, which, you'll remember, is kind of what Augustus wanted all along.
Exactly. A stable of young men.
Augustus had been saying for years, this is too big a job for any one man. You need a stable of young men to come behind me and on me in my hair. Bukkake. It was the Bukkake strategy that Augustus had. But he had his small council, the Bukkake Council.
Right.
They were supposed to take over when he was gone, but they mostly all fucking died. I mean, Germanicus is still around. Drusus is around.
Yeah.
And Tiberius. But anyway, Tebow's like, no, it's too much. Then things got nasty. Tebow sighed eventually and said, look, I don't want the job, but I tell you what, I'll accept whatever part of the job you think is reasonable. Let's divide it up.
Right.
And I'll take it whichever part you think
right.
I should have.
That sounds like a fair compromise to me. But Cassius,
Cassius, what?
Cassius Asininus. I don't know how to say his name. Gallus fucks it all up, and I hope he didn't say this with an attitude. But you got to get the sense that he did. He said, "Well, what parts do you want?" Tiberius is shocked by this.
No.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think he said it like this. He said, "Oh, for fuck's sake, what part do you want?" That's how he said it.
Sire. And again, how many times have we said over the last 25 episodes with Augustus, he played the game. He played the humble servant. He played the fact that he played up the fact that the Senate mattered. Your opinion matters to me. Your work matters to me. I need your help. So this open and blunt talk about power, I think maybe shocked or disgusted Tiberius. And so he pulls himself together, and the best he can do, because he's probably about to lose it, he goes, "It would be improper for me to say what parts you should give me." But again, this should have been really easy, but it's starting to fall apart, and both sides are not meeting eye to eye.
Now, there was already a little bit of a beef between Thibaut and Asinius Gallus, because
yes,
when Thibaut was forced by Augustus to divorce the love of his life,
right,
Vipsania,
aww,
so he could marry the filthy whore Julia,
right,
Asinius Gallus picked her up on the rebound.
Oh, do you know what Suetonius said about that? He said, at the time of the divorce from Tiberius, Vipsania was pregnant with their second child, who did not survive. However, with Gallus, she had at least 6 sons. So he picked her up off the street, took her home, and nailed her at least 6 times good and hard, which just had to really piss off Tiberius every time he saw her preggers or heard that she was preggers.
And she was the love of his life, and she was the daughter of Agrippa.
Yeah.
So he was forced to divorce the daughter of Agrippa so he could marry Agrippa's widow, Augustus's daughter, the filthy whore Julia.
Yeah.
Now this guy, who's banging the love of his life, has the temerity to give him some tood
right
in the Senate.
It's like, I'm barely holding it together, you fucking asshole.
didn't work out very well for Asinius Gallus. Gaius Asinius Gallus Salaninus.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work out very well for him later on. He died in prison of starvation, just like Julia. It took Tiberius a while to get his revenge, but
revenge is best served cold, according to the Klingons. And I think Tiberius waited.
We'll get to that later. But anyway, so Thibaut goes, well, it would be unseemly for me to suggest that we break it up and then to make a decision about what part I want. It's like, right, I'm the guy cutting the cake and then I take the biggest slice for myself.
That's tacky.
That's not how you do, right? And I am a gentleman. Then another guy pointed out that Thibaut hadn't actually vetoed the motion, which he had the power to do. They were like, ha-ha, you could have just vetoed the whole thing.
So you don't mean
but
it.
But you haven't.
Yeah.
So you really want it. You're just playing hard to get. You're like a 16-year-old cheerleader under the fucking bleachers going, oh, no, I couldn't possibly. And then as soon as I walk away, you go, come here and stick that cock in my mouth.
I couldn't possibly take on you and all your friends. Okay.
So they just start laughing at him and pointing the finger, and he withdrew his objections. And so it was settled.
Oh.
Poor Thibaut has to take all of the cock. I mean, the power.
He has to be king of the world. Oh, poor.
But
him. Yeah,
it may not be a lifelong appointment. Suetonius tells us that he accepted power only until such time as you judge it fair to grant me some repose in my old age.
Do you know what I would have said if I was the senators at that point? Look, you've already had 10 years of relaxation. That was your retirement. I hope you fucking enjoyed it. But here's the other part of it. Tiberius has read enough history to know that's not how power works. And again, we've said this before, Sulla is the only person that comes to mind who retired and wasn't immediately killed. But even then, he had set up the Senate to be full of pro-Sulla people. So he made that happen. But the point is, that's not how power works.
So the question here, Ray, to finish up this episode, is was it all a farce on behalf of Thibault? No, you go.
No, I think he's legitimate when he says, look, I'm already 56, I'm tired, I've got a glimpse of what's ahead of me, fuck me, but I still think he wanted it. I don't know if he truly felt any sense of obligation to Augustus, a man he had been listening to and obeying for years, but I think he wanted the power, but at the same time, I think he just wanted the Senate to see a little bit of frustration or something on his part to know, look, I'll do this and I kind of want to do it, but fuck me, I want you to acknowledge along with me, this is a shit ton of work. What do you think?
Sorry, I think it's hard to tell. I mean, let me break it down. So, on one hand, we know that Julius Caesar was assassinated in part because members of the elite thought he was going to take all of the power and declare himself king.
Yeah,
and they wanted their share of the bling. They didn't do it for noble reasons. They did it because they wanted a share of the spoils. And we know that when Augustus's turn came along, he very carefully kept up the illusion that he was the suffering servant.
Right.
Something else the Christians stole from him, apart from being son of a god and a god, the suffering servant. He was like, listen, I really don't want to have to do this, but okay, if you think I'm the best man for the job, I will do my bit for Rome.
Because that's what
the aristocracy does. We do our bit. And he, even though... Really, he was the great power for that 40-odd years. He went to extreme efforts to keep up the pantomime that he was really just doing what they wanted him to do. It wasn't his idea. They were thrusting it upon him.
Right, a lot of thrusting. Right.
A lot of thrusting. And then he'd go home and thrust it into the young maidens, deflower the maidens. So you're like, Thibault's not dumb.
Right.
He must know, and he and Augustus must have spoken about it many, many a time. And he was probably there when Augustus was talking about it with Agrippa and Maecenas back in the day. You can't be seen to be hungry for power.
Right.
You have to make it look like it's being thrust upon you. So Thibault is, if he's smart, and I think he was, he's going to maintain the fiction. Now, to me, what it reminds me of is American politicians getting up and saying, you know, America's a great country and democracy and freedom, and we're spreading freedom to these other countries, and oh, I like to thank Jesus. And they do that. They do a pantomime. They keep up a pantomime for the sake of appearances. It's a pantomime that I'm a Christian. I believe America is great and noble and does no wrong. I believe that we have a good, well-functioning democracy. All of these things, you know, you can't speak the truth about that and survive for very long in American politics unless you're a Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, and even a Donald Trump. He came out and said, you know, America's fucked and politics is fucked, and I'm going to fix it. But very few people can say that and get away with it.
Right.
Most American politicians maintain a pretense, a facade, because if you spoke the truth to people, if you said, look, thank you, I'm just calling this press conference to announce my candidacy for presidency of the United States. A little bit about myself for those of you who don't need me. I'm a psychopath. I like power and control. I will destroy anyone and anything that gets in my path.
And
really, my
it.
Desire is to have all of the money and all of the power.
Yeah,
I am a pedophile, and I do have women locked in my basement. I do participate in illicit gay sex in parks and hotel rooms whenever I get high on meth. My wife has been threatened into submission, so she won't say anything about this by my legal team. And I, you know, I'm in bed deep with the military industrial complex. So, you know, if you elect me, there will be lots of wars.
Yeah.
The Pentagon's budget will go up every year by $10-50 billion. And I'm just, all I care about is, making as much money as possible as quickly as I can.
Yeah.
If I burn the country and the planet down around me as a result, so, I don't give a fuck. Thank you. And I hope I have your vote in November.
And God bless
you. You can't.
Yeah,
you can't say that. I don't believe in God because I'm an atheist. But I can't, you know, I'm not gonna. Right. But I'll keep up the pretense for the dummies.
Yeah,
you can't say that. So Thibault couldn't say, "Yes, thank you. I want all the power."
Right.
So yes, he would have to say these things.
But did he have make to do it look so like badly? You don't want
the power? Well, but on the other hand, Ray.
Yes.
Here's a guy who did walk away from it all for 10 years.
Yeah.
Because early on, because he said he was too tired and didn't want to die on his horse.
Yeah.
Now, that may have been spitting the dummy. I don't want to be a caretaker president while you're grooming your adopted son. So, fuck you. I'm just going to take my bat and my ball and go home. Maybe. We don't know whether he was genuine or not.
Yeah.
Maybe he expected Augustus to go, no, please don't go. Please don't go. I need you. I need you. And when Augustus said, fine, if you close the door, don't come back. He's like, fine, I won't. He goes, fine, don't. He goes, all right, I won't then. And it kind of, you know, it went badly.
Yeah.
He didn't think it through. Maybe. We talked about that during the Augustus series. But also keep in mind that apparently Thibault and his brother Drusus weren't very happy with the Principate. There were suggestions. Oh, yeah. That we covered in the last season, that they'd actually said to Augustus, listen, you know, fun's fun, but you've stabilized things. It's time to get back to the Principate. Get back to the Republic and the Principate now. Mm-hmm. They were pushing him. There is a suggestion. They had been pushing him while Drusus was still alive to, you know, get back to the way things were, that they, because they were Claudians.
Right.
They wanted to get back to the thing that their family had built and defended for 500 years, the Roman Republic. And there was a suggestion that Drusus might have been killed because he was putting too much pressure on Augustus. Right. I don't really believe that. But so you got to think about, though, the fact that they weren't very happy with the Principate. And finally, and this is a bit of a spoiler, as we will see down the track, eventually Thibault ends up getting tired of being emperor and just walks away again. Goes into exile again.
2.0.
Goes, fuck this. I'm done. He goes, I'm out. Let Sejanus do the job. I can't deal with this. I'm going to retire with my hookers and my coke and my porn. Some reggae music. Yeah. I'm done. Yeah. I don't know, man. You've got to take all of that into account and go, well, I mean, there's plenty of evidence for and logic and reason behind both of those possibilities.
Yeah. You and I like to talk about ideas because we certainly have had, we've seen a lot of examples of good and bad character over the last 5 years or whatever it is, how long we've been doing this. I just think that, I think you're right. Tiberius he's got to be conflicted. Who says no to power? At the same time, he's got to know what he's getting himself into, and he's already got money. So he's good either way. The worst thing that's going to happen to him is he's going to be on an island with all the luxuries you could possibly want. So maybe he was just going through the motions for now with an eye towards his own retirement, but at the same time, certainly not putting the passion into it that Augustus seemed to. I think he's doing what he's got to do yet again, but I don't think he thinks he's going to have to stick around forever. But again, we'll never know. It would be great to know the exact way he was thinking at this moment.
Like, what are the options? He could have said, listen, new plan. We're going to go back to the old Republic.
Yeah.
I think we've still got the paperwork around here somewhere.
Just change your date.
I'm going to take my money, go to an island. Yeah. If you need me, just call me. I'll give you my private line.
Or don't.
But like, if you want to ask what would Augustus do, give me a call. But apart from that, you're on your own. Good luck. Hope it all works out.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'll be consul for a year for transition sake, and then I'm out. I've got my money.
I'm going to pull a Sulla.
Gonna, well, no, pull a Sulla means cutting people's heads off, retiring from the dictatorship. Yeah. But he, you know, he could have done that. What's the worst that would have happened? I mean, is somebody likely to have come along and then had him killed, like a rival for power? Probably not. If he's restoring the Republic, everyone has a shot. Everyone has a shot of being consul. Everyone has a shot of being a praetor, proconsul. So he could have turned the clock back and just retired happily. So I don't know, man. I really have spent the last week trying to figure this out. I don't have an answer for you.
Well, as far as we know, I think Augustus was picturing Germanicus as his successor. Why didn't Tiberius said, you know what? I don't fucking want it. I've got all the money I need. I could ever spend. Why don't you go tap young Germanicus, bring him in here, go through the charade. I'm getting the fuck out of here. I'm Audi 5000. But he doesn't say that either. Again, this is a very, in some ways, complex person. We don't know what his conflicting motivations were if he had conflicting motivations.
And you might have hit on something there. Maybe it's not about him. Maybe it's about the kids.
Mm-hmm.
His son, Drusus.
Right.
And his nephew, Germanicus. Maybe it was about them. So Drusus would have been 28 at this stage, give or take. I think Germanicus was 29. So I don't know, maybe he was doing it for the kids,
for his kid, or both kids.
Well, yeah, his kid, as we'll see in upcoming episodes, he didn't really have very uncle-y feelings towards Germanicus, apparently, which surprises me because he loved his brother.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Who knows?
I mean, I think that's kind of, you know, enough for today. That's basically Thibaut tried to get out of the job, and he doesn't want it, and they're like, talk him into it, basically.
He says, okay.
So... again, not an auspicious start to to being the new princeps.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to end. We'll be back. I'm not going to read any reviews because we did three last week. We'll do some more next month. But thank you to everyone who's been supporting the show. I have to say. The comments, the feedback on Facebook, etc., has been lovely. Everyone saying they're excited about the new series. It's very nice of you. Makes us feel good. And don't forget, if you're a Reddit tour, a Reddit user, go over to reddit.com. Look for the Cam and Ray subreddit and subscribe to that. I mean, if for no other, I mean, you'll see us talking about stuff. We can talk about shows and all that kind of stuff. But also, it helps us promote the show in Reddit. It's another place where people get to discover the show, and it gets us away from Facebook because Facebook are a corrupt bunch of mongrels. Reddit probably are as well. But at least if you divide things up between two lots of corrupt mongrels, you got a better chance of them not Alex Jonesing you all the way. We'll be back next week with more Thibaut.